जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन बल्लभा गिरिवरदारी। जसोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जन जमुनाथिरावनचारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राज कचलय शुतुरुषत श्री श्रीमार स्वांगय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की गौर प्रेमनंदी। All glories to this one of bodies, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sixth Canto, Chapter 1, Verse 50. Panchabi kurute swartan. Pancha vedhatha panchabhihi. Ekastu shodashena trin. Swayam sapta dusho nute. Panchabi kurute swartan pancha vedhatha panchabhihi ekastu shodashena trin swayam saptadasho shnite. Panchabi kurute swartan pancha vedhatha panchabhihi ekastu shodashena trin swayam saptadasho shnite. Panchabi kurute swartan
bolo
Chabi Vatat Panchabi Ekastu Shodashena Trin Vayam Saptadash Roshnite.
Panchabi, with the five working senses, voice, arms, legs, anus, and genitals. Kurute performs. Swa or tan. his desired interest. Pancha, the five objects of the senses. Sound, form, touch, aroma, and taste. Veda, nose, ata, thus, panchabihi, by the five senses of perception. Hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and feeling. Eka, the one, two, but, shodashena, by these 15 items in the mind. Trin, the three categories of experience, happiness or stress, and a mixture of both. Swayam, he, the living entity himself. Saptadasha, the 17th item, Ashnute, enjoys. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So translation, above the five senses of perception, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul, the living being himself, who, in cooperation with the other 16, enjoys the material world alone. The living being enjoys three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. Okay, purport. Everyone engages in work with his hands, legs, and other senses just to achieve a certain goal according to his concocted ideas. One tries to enjoy the five sense objects, namely form, sound, taste, aroma, and touch, not knowing the actual goal of life, which is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Because of disobeying the Supreme Lord, one is put into material conditions, and he then tries to improve his situation in a concocted way, not desiring to follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nevertheless, the Supreme Lord is so kind that he comes himself to instruct the bewildered living entity how to act obediently, and then gradually return home, back to Godhead, where he can attain an eternal, peaceful life of bliss and knowledge. The living entity has a body, which is a very complicated combination of the material elements, and with this body he struggles alone, as indicated in this verse by the words, Akas 2. For example, if one is struggling in the ocean, he must swim through it alone. Although many other men and aquatics are swimming in the ocean, he must take care of himself because no one else will help him. Therefore, this verse indicates that the 17th item, the soul, must work alone. Although he tries to create society, friendship, and love, no one will be able to help him but Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Therefore, his only concern should be how to satisfy Krishna. That is also what Krishna wants. Sarva dharman pratyagya mam ekam sharanam vraja. People, bewildered by material conditions, try to be united, but although they strive for unity among man and nations, all their attempts are futile. Everyone must struggle alone for existence with the many elements of nature. Therefore, one's only hope, as Krishna advises, is to surrender to him, for he can help one become free from the ocean of nescience. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore prayed, Ayinanda tanujan kinkaram patitam mam vishrame bhavam gudau. Kripaya tava pada pankajastita dhuli sadrisham vinchintaya. Quote, O Krishna, beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of nescience, and although I am struggling very hard, there is no way I can save myself. If you kindly pick me up and fix me as one of the particles of dust at your lotus feet, that will save me. That's the end of the quote. In a similar way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang. This is actually the song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote to the fifth verse of the Shishashakam in his Gitavali. Anadi karma pale padi bhavarnarva jale tari bhare nadeki upai. Quote, my dear Lord, I cannot remember when I somehow or other fell into this ocean of nescience, and now I can find no way to rescue myself. End quote. We should remember that everyone is responsible for his own life. If an individual becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, he is then delivered from the ocean of nescience. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, the conclusion of yesterday's topics, the Yamadutas were describing how the living entity is completely absorbed in this one life. And therefore, like an animal who's in ignorance and cannot understand the soul in the animal's body, who cannot understand what he did in the past to get that body and what he's doing now to get a future body. So also like an animal, agya tamasa was the word used, who's ignorant, we're completely absorbed in this one body. We don't understand what we did to get this body, and we don't understand what we're doing by which we'll get another body in the future, right? Krishna says the same thing, Gita, ukramatam sitam vapi bunjanam vagunavitam. The living entity cannot understand how he's enjoying under the spell of the most material nature. Why is that? Vimudha. Nanupashanti, because he's a fool. And Paishanti Gana Chakshu, who can see it? Those whose eyes have been trained by knowledge, they can see what's going on. But those who are, you know, more or less, Vimuda means veritably dumb or foolish, they cannot see what's happening. And therefore, they put all their attention on this one body, not seeing the consequences of their actions now, not understanding the consequences by which they got this present body. So now, having explained that previously, the Yamadutas are giving more details why that is the case, that the living entity gets so stuck up on this one life and this one body, etc. So then the answer in short, and that's really the next series of verses, the answer in short is due to the subtle body, which has these impressions of material experience that is forcing him to act in this way. That is basically the answer. So why is it that we get so stuck up on this one life, this one point, not really even trying to comprehend the consequences of what we're doing now or what we did in the past to get the situation we have now? Why does that happen? The answer is due to the subtle body. Krishna says the same thing in Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, he explains, in three places he explains, it's very rare to know him. The last place he explains that in chapter 7, Mam tu vedana kashchana, it's very rare that anyone knows me. And then the reason he gives is Icha Dvesha Samutena Dwanda Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutani Sammoha. Sammoha, completely bewildered. Sargayanti Panantapa. The living entity is completely bewildered. Sammoha, by what? By the subtle body. Icha Dvesha Samutena, which has these impressions of desire and hate fixed in it. And so because of those impressions, Dwandva Mohena, he becomes absorbed in duality. And therefore he cannot know me. It's not that it would be difficult to know Krishna in principle, but because he's so absorbed in these trifling affairs of material existence on account of his subtle body, which has these impressions of desire and hate, he doesn't know me. He can't understand me. Does it make sense? Very simple point. So that's what the Yamadutas are about to explain right now, that this is why a living entity is so stuck up on this one. Just like sometimes you have, suppose a devotee comes to you with a particular problem, and you give them a solution, and especially a Christian conscious one, which is usually the most undesirable solution to hear when you're struggling with some situation. So you're having some problems, some issue, and then the devotee or spiritual master may advise you, chant Hare Krishna, and hear the Bhagavatam. Like, what type of advice is this? You know, I'm coming to you with a very serious thing. I need something practical, 1, 2, 3. And they're giving a transcendental solution. I'm not saying there isn't room for other stuff, but I'm just making a point. And then we don't appreciate that advice. Why? Because we're stuck up on this one little point, this one, he looked at me this way, she did this to me, and they said that to me, they did this to me. And we become so, why does that take place? Even when we know that the solution is chant Hare Krishna, make spiritual advancement, but somehow there's like, I know that's there, but this point is really what's all important. That's because of the subtle body. It's actually forcing the living entity in this way. And he has insufficient spiritual strength to resist the pull of that conditioned nature. So that's in summary what the next few verses are about. So now in this particular verse, the various, let's say, constituents of the subtle body are being given here. First you have the Ganendriyas. The Ganendriya means the knowledge-acquiring senses. So the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and skin. These are called knowledge-acquiring experiences. They're the knowledge-acquiring senses. They're the senses that one uses to gather information about the material world and gather experience about the material world. This is part of the subtle body as well, these Gyanendriyas. Then after you gather information about the material world and you make a decision, okay, I want to enjoy this, I don't want to enjoy that, that's to be avoided, this one is the good one. Then you need Karmendriyas to pursue that. So then the Karmendriyas are the arms, the legs, the voice. That's interesting, the voice. You need voice to achieve your goals and material goals in life. And then the anus and genitals, because without being able to evacuate, then it's hard to function in the material world. So these are the working senses by which we pursue our particular choice of sense gratification, and for others, by which they pursue transcendence also. You need Karmendriyas. So you have the Gyanendriyas, you have the Karmendriyas, and then the objects that the senses are trying to know or trying to experience, sound, taste, form, smell, and I don't know what you say, touch, feeling, touch. These are the five objects that the knowledge acquiring senses are pursuing. So all these things are considered, these are aspects of the subtle body. Then above them is the mind. So the mind is the center of all these senses, right? The mind is the, how do you say, the kingpin, so to speak, and he's controlling the workings of all these other things. All the senses are grouped about the mind. So according to your mentality, your senses function in a different way, right? We see that before we were devotees, for example, simple example, we may have been really attracted to meat. I often mention that after I decided to follow Prabhupada and become vegetarian, which was right when I read the SSR, the first thought that came to me was, how was I going to give up Buffalo Joe's? Now, if you're not from maybe Chicago or Midwest, you might not know what Buffalo Joe's is. A type of chicken shack, and what a particular type of sauce that was very much desirable to my senses at the time. So when I read SSR, and I was thinking, okay, I'll be vegetarian because to eat meat is sinful. That was what convinced me in Prabhupada's book, eating meat was sinful. Somehow that convinced me. Even though I grew up with a lot of vegetarian friends, and they always preached to me, they could never convince me on some of the other points, but this point convinced me. But then I was thinking, how would I be able to give up Buffalo Joe's? Because Buffalo Joe's is a regular visiting spot. But then after eating prasadam, practicing devotional service, my subtle body shifted a little bit. So the same thing that was desirable for my senses became detestable, because now the mentality has changed, right? You understand? So the senses are grouped about the mind. So with the changing of the mind, you change the way the senses function, the way they perceive the world, the way they experience it. So the mind is the centerfold of all these things. So the mind is considered as a 16th item here. And then above that 16th item, it is the soul who is above it all. And it is the soul who is actually experiencing the world. The mind doesn't experience anything, nor do the various senses experience anything. It is the soul who's the experiencer. He's the knower of the field, right? The field includes all these items. So here, Prabhupada is pointing out on the word ekas too. So the 17th item, soul, is struggling alone in this material world. So I find this to be a very fascinating point when I first read the Bhagavatam. The soul is struggling alone in this world. And now Prabhupada clarifies this point, although he may try to create society, friendship, and love, United Nations, this is actually impossible because the soul is actually, factually struggling alone. And he gives an example in the purport, just like a person who's in the ocean. So if you're in the ocean, you're struggling alone. No one can help you. And suppose you are in the ocean, everyone else around you is also in the ocean, then who can help you? Who is able to help you in that situation? No one can help you because you're all struggling. Everyone is drowning. So similarly, all the living entities, they have these subtle bodies which they're trapped in, and they're struggling alone. And now they try to create society, friendship, and love, but that's just like trying to create a society in the ocean. Now, that's obviously clearly foolish. If you're like, okay, you know, you're swimming, you're treading, you're on the, you know, verge of death, practically speaking, and you say, let's create a community together. Now, that's obviously literally, if you try to picture it literally, that's just a completely foolish notion. But Prabhupada's pointing out here, the same is true, materially speaking, when you try to create society and friendship and love, because everyone is actually not in control of the situation, so no one can be the guardian of anyone else in the material world. The soul is actually struggling alone with the modes of nature, with its subtle body. And we see that sometimes you try to help someone, But ultimately, for example, with like modern psychology, they try to help people, but what can they do? Because their subtle bodies are so strong, and unless they can help them transcend the subtle body, people are forced into these very foolish situations, so no one can help them. Finally, everyone is responsible for their own life, Prabhupada says this here. Everyone's responsible for getting out of that particular form of bondage, the bondage of the subtle body. Does it make sense? So I had some verses from the Bhagavatam for consideration. Just a couple of verses. I didn't want to beleaguer this point, but these are some really cool verses. One of them is, of course, nice. It's from the 13th chapter of the first canto where Yudhishthira Maharaj is being chastised by Narada Muni, because his uncles, Dhritarashtra and Vidura, along with Gandhari, they've all just run off to the forest for liberation. And he's thinking, who will protect them? You know, this is very much a serious concern for them. Who will protect them? And so Narada Muni, chastising him, he quotes his verse. This is first canto, chapter 13, verse 46. Everyone can bring computers. You can look up these nectarian verses of Bhagavatam and get some spiritual insight and inspiration. First canto, 13, chapter, verse 46. Narada Muni says, Kala karma ganadhino deho yam panchabhotika katam anyas tu kopayat sarpagrasto yataparam. So he says there, Katam anyamsu gopaya, how can anyone be a guardian of anyone else in this material world? He poses a question. Because sometimes we assume that position with other living. I will protect you. I will be your guardian. And anyone who tells you that is very intoxicating. It's very alluring. And also to feel that you're the guardian of someone is also very intoxicating. But here Narada Muni points out, in the context of Yudhishthira thinking, who will guard them? Who will protect them? He poses a question, who can be the guardian of anyone in this material world? And then he points out some reasons why this is not possible. Kala karma gunadhino dehoyam panchabhotika. That means that everyone in this material world is under the influence of three factors, kala, karma, and guna. They're controlled by these three factors. First is the time factor is there. And with the movement of time, people's karmas are fructifying, which is beyond your control. Like I mentioned in the fifth canto, when we were hearing Lakshmi's prayers on the planet of Jambudweep, she was saying, basically, if you want to get married, you should make sure you have good karma. Because if you have bad karma and it starts to fructify, then your spouse may not want to stay with you anymore. You know, so you get married and your health deteriorates and you lose all your money and everything. And so they might not be so inclined to stay with you, you know, especially in the age of Kali. So she was making this point, make sure you have good karma. So time factor is moving, and people's karmas are fructifying, which is beyond anyone's control. And with that, people are under the control of the gunas. So then he gives an example, sarpa grasta yataparam. It's just like the mouse who is just about to be swallowed up by the serpent. So everyone's being swallowed up by the serpent of these three factors, kala, karma, and guna. So who can protect who in this material world? Who can protect who in this material world? Everyone's about to be devoured by the serpent of kala, karma, guna. Who can protect who? You know, someone said, I will protect you. And then they say yes, and they turn around and get hit by a car and finished. Where is our protection? So this is a very nice verse. Another verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. I just wanted to expand this point a little bit. This is Hiranyakashipu, 7th canto, chapter 2, verse 21. This is a very beautiful verse spoken by none other than Hiranyakashipu. And he's preaching to his family members about the effect of material attachment. You know, he's one to talk, but he's preaching to them nonetheless, as we may also tend to do. And he says here, Bhutanam iha samvasa prapayam iva suvrite. Daive nai katra nitanam unnitam swakarmabhi. This is a very nice verse. He says that, he speaks to his mother. He says, in a restaurant or a drinking place for cold water, travelers are brought together. Understand? When you're traveling, they have periodically some space for drinking water. Like if any of you ever gone on the bike trail here in Chicago, periodically they have like water fountains and so on. So because of that, people are brought together for some short amount of time. And then due to the influence of daiva ekatra, so daiva ekatra means by superior arrangement or by the control of some superior agency, then they are separated, never to see each other again. So by superior agency here means like the mold of nature, or by our subtle bodies, we are brought together, and by that same influence we are separated. So although it looks like we're doing something in this material world, we're creating society, we're creating friendship, we're creating love, that's actually just the force of our karmas bringing us together. And then by the same force, we're being separated again forever. Just like that. And this is happening. Only in illusion someone thinks that we are doing something. Pakritihi kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. So in this way, it's being brought out here in the purport that the living entities are actually struggling alone. Although it looks like they're trying to help each other, everyone is struggling with these factors. No one can actually do anything for anyone else. And therefore, to get out of this situation, one should surrender to the Supreme Lord. Because that's what the Supreme Lord wants. Prabhupada quotes here, 1866 Gita. He quotes Lord Chaitanya's prayer also. Ayinanda tanujan kinkaram patitam mam vishname bhuma. Somehow I have fallen into this condition. And so the only solution for this condition, because I'm struggling alone, is to surrender to the Supreme Lord. No one else can give shelter in this material world, because they're also in the ocean of material existence, struggling. So the only shelter is the Supreme Lord. The Lord wants us to realize that. So we should take shelter of him. Prabhupada's last lines here. We should remember that everyone is responsible for his own life. So everyone, in other words, is responsible for taking shelter of Krishna. No one can do it for you. Ultimately, you have to take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, you have to struggle with the subtle body. And this is happening perpetually. So that's that verse. Does anyone want to ask anything about that? Any questions, comments, concerns, clarifications?
Yeah. Everybody's got to fly their own plane.
Yeah.
So that always kind of stuck in my mind, that, you know.
That's in the chapter 15 of the first canto where he mentions that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could explain the role of the devotee and the role of guru in getting someone...
I'm sorry, the role of...
The devotee and the role of guru, sadhu and guru, in getting somebody to come to this position of flying their own kite or being responsible for their own surrender.
Oh, well, I think that's straightforward. They basically speak to us. And then we hear them. And then if we are intelligent enough, we follow what they say, and then by following what they say, we make advancement, and then we get out into the world. So that's pretty straightforward. Prabhupada speaks about the guru testing us in 434 Bhagavad Gita, and if he's satisfied with us, he reveals things to us by talking to us. It's not too mystical there. just like in the beginning of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami tests Parikshit Maharaj. So the hearing process is a dynamic one. It's not like what we kind of tend to do in the morning classes, especially where we sit and exhibit the symptoms of hearing, but no hearing actually happens. But the role of sadhu and guru is, of course, very clear in terms of our getting out of condition. Right? It's pretty straightforward. You can turn it up, I think. I don't know if it's on. Oh, it's on, okay. It's just...
Yeah, when the Yudhishthira Maharaj was going to heavenly abodes and Arjuna was going, they have got different plane. Is it something like that? The story was there in the Bhagavatam?
I don't know. I don't know that story. But I think it's clear.
And they left Draupadi alone over there. And Draupadi
oh, that's in the that's also in the 15th chapter, yes. So I don't remember they flew their own planes or something, but... You know, that's just an analogy, right? Prabhupada is just helping us understand that, first of all, that statement is spoken of in the context of the time of death specifically. So while the plane is on the ground, you can take help of others, you know, and they fix it up, do this and that. But once the plane takes off, then, you know, another plane can't help you if something goes wrong all of a sudden. You know, you can't say, you know, mayday, mayday, and another plane's going to come over and swoop, you know. If you're once you're in the air, it's, you know, it's whatever you've learned now is your only let's say shelter as such. So we learn from the sadhu to take shelter of Krishna. Then specifically in the context of the time of death, then the sadhu is not that we can rest on our laurels. Well, I have a really powerful guru, so everything's okay. It doesn't matter if I'm Krishna conscious or not. Or I joined the right institution, so it doesn't matter about my own consciousness. The point is that we have to be Krishna conscious for ourselves. The gurus and the association of Vaishnavas are there to help us take shelter, but then we have to take shelter. As the saying may go, you can bring the horse to water, but you can't make him drink it. So it is we who have to do the taking shelter of Krishna part. Like that. That's the comparison there. Any other questions, comments? Yeah. Derek Guru.
You're explaining that the soul is the actual experiencer of the activities. But I've also heard that the soul is aloof from the activity, so I wonder if you could...
He's aloof in terms of his constitutional position. It's like dreaming. I mean, you're not really enjoying that realm of existence. You can't say you're not experiencing it because the soul is experiencing it. But he's constitutionally different from that which he's experiencing. The soul is experiencing matter, which is of one ontological category. The soul is of another ontological category. So although he's an experiencer, because he's of a different nature, it is said that he's aloof. So that's kind of like a straightforward thing.
So, in the Association of Devotees, we...
Sure. So the question is, I have a limit. It seems like my mind, or let's say my subtle body, has a limit in which it can digest and apply and so on. So how do we overcome that limitation? Or do we just really kind of just accept that's my limit and then from there just try to augment our taste? And the answer is yes. Krishna speaks about the mind being uncontrolled and controlled. I was quoting these verses yesterday. Bandur atmatmanas tasya yena atmai vatmana jita anatmanas tushatrute. The mind that is controlled is a friend, the mind that is uncontrolled is an enemy. So in yoga, in all yoga systems, including bhakti, the mind does play a central role in our development. Krishna says we should elevate ourselves with the help of the mind, not degrade ourselves. And part of that help is going beyond the limitations of the mind, which says basically enjoy the material world. That's what the mind is telling us to do. So we do have to overcome that. And although we do experience in our let's say, beginning application of the processes of yoga, this sort of weakness of heart, we're attached to sense objects, we're envious, we're attached to prestige. These are the various categories of weakness of heart. It's an anartha, by which we feel that we cannot do it, or we at least we'll do it eventually, but right now it's too much. That is overcome by the process of Krishna consciousness, gradually associating with devotees, gaining greater eagerness to attain the absolute, gaining greater control of the mind by detachment from sensual objects or associating with the material world in terms of the mode of passion, which makes us weak at heart. Why we become weak at heart is because we think of the world and we associate with it in the mode of passion, in terms of exploiting it. And therefore, we experience weakness of heart. As we associate with the world and think of it in terms of service to Krishna, at least in the mode of goodness, in a detached sort of spirit, then we gain greater strength to overcome the influence of the mind, which says, serve Krishna tomorrow, not today. And In that way, with that plus our own eagerness for the absolute that comes by associating with sadhus, we can overcome a lot of the limitations of our subtle bodies. We don't have to, you know, sarva dharma pratyagya, ma me kam, shadanam to the mind. The mind speaks, sarva dharma pratyagya, ma me kam, shadanam. Yes, 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 yes. Immediately we surrender. Mind speaks, mano uvacha, sarva dharma pratyagya, yes, yes, yes. Immediately we follow. So we don't have to do that, but it takes time.
We don't mind. Even if the mind is forcing us, let's say, sarva dharma pratyagya, ma me kshanam braja. But we, because bhakti is activity of soul proper, right? It's activity of soul. So even if the mind is fighting with us and we do such abominable activities that it forces us to move away from the temple. But still, if we stick to the process with the association of devotees,
sure,
we'll be sure enough to get a...
You know, bhakti is imperishable, so definitely don't leave bhakti, even if sometimes you have to leave the association of devotees, at least chant Hare Krishna. Because bhakti is avyayam, it's imperishable. But it might take you a few births to get it together. You know, if our level of seriousness is, as Arjuna asks, what if once someone starts the process, but due to insufficient effort, chalita manasa, due to insufficient effort, the mind takes them off the path, and what does this, yeah, so it might take a few births then. But don't leave Krishna, that's the point.
Quick clarification on this last one you made. I was just reading yesterday in the Mukundamala Stotra, the first verse, the purport.
Okay.
Prabhupada explains in that purport that one who dedicates his life to the preaching mission, then the Lord makes a special exemption. He could go back to God in this one life itself. He may not have to take birth again. And I think, I can't think of other references, but Prabhupada's probably said these kind of statements in other places.
Well, he could. I mean, Krishna is independent. He can do whatever he wants. But there is actual process that we might have to consider in the meantime as well. So Krishna could do, and he can also not do. So therefore, Prabhupada says, attaining siddhi by kripa alone is like getting an honorary degree. So in the meantime, there's an actual process. And so one would do well to follow it in China. Well, that's fine. I mean, that's part of the preaching, but there are elements, other elements of the process. Like if you read Prabhupada's books, you will come to know what all those elements are. And Prabhupada generally equally emphasizes all of them. It's just like in some places, like in Bhakti Sundarbha, Jiva Goswami will say that just by serving the Guru alone, you need not do anything else and you can achieve the goal of life. But then later on, he clarifies that just because that is emphasized, it doesn't mean don't do the other angas. A bhakti, it just means to bring out that glory. It is said like that. It's not hyperbole either. It's not like that's just an exaggeration. But it's a glorification to attract our hearts to the service of Guru or Vaishnavas. But it doesn't mean now don't hear, don't chant, don't, you know, just do this one. So he clarifies it, you know. So similarly, Prabhupada started a preaching mission. He wants to glorify preaching. He wants his devotees to preach. So naturally, he will say such statements to attract our hearts to that idea. But then in his books, he's given so many other points also, which he's also equally emphasized, saying for someone who's not disciplined and serving the Guru, he can never go back home to Godhead and so on. So then if you take all the statements together, you'll get a clear understanding of what needs to be done. Okay, any other points, questions, comments, concerns? Okay, we're going to go to the next verse then. It's 808. If you don't mind, please. It's 6th Canto, Chapter 1, Text number 51. Tare tat shodasha kalam lingam shakti trayamahat date nu samshritim pumsi harsha shoka bayartidham. Nice. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts. We just heard about that previous verse. The 5 knowledge requiring senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, mahat. Mahat means very strong or insurmountably strong desires, and therefore causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod, Anush Samshriti. When a living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. So that's what's explained here. Ekasu Shodashena, trend. Trend means three types of experiences in this world. So as a demigod, he's blissful. As an animal, he's fearful. As a human, he's lamenting and anxiety. He's miserable. In all conditions, however, he's actually miserable. His miserable condition is called Samshriti, or transmigration of material life. Srila Prabhupada's purport, the sum and substance of material conditional life is explained in this verse. Sum and substance. The living entity, the 17th element, is struggling alone life after life. We just discussed that. This struggle is called Samshriti, or material conditional life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the force of material nature is insurmountably strong. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dhratyaya. Material nature harasses the living entity in different bodies, but if the living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes free from this entanglement as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, mam eva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. Thus, his life becomes successful. So you can see this verse is just a further explanation of the previous verse. In the Sanskrit, it said, lingam shakti trayamahat. So this lingam means the subtle body, composed of these 16 elements, which we've just discussed, is Shakti Trayam. It is the result of the three modes of material nature. And this subtle body is Mahat. Mahat means it's very difficult to transcend the influence of the subtle body upon us. You know, it's very difficult to transcend the desires that come up in the mind and the way we tend to think about certain things. Like if someone tells you, the way you're thinking is wrong. Immediately, even if you don't say anything, immediately your face is, the way you think is wrong, immediately that's what goes on in false ego. You know, the mind's basically protecting the false ego. So someone says, your way of thinking is not the correct way of thinking. Your way of thinking is not the correct way. Immediately fighting takes place and so on. It's very hard to overcome the influence of the subtle body. As a result of not being able to do so, Datte Anu Samshmitim Pumsi, the living entity, continues rotating in one body after another, like this, going on. Sometimes demigod body, sometimes human body, many times animal body, 8 million species, many times animal body, sometimes human life, like this going on. Date anu samshritim pumsi, harsha shoka bhaya artidam. And in this way, they're experiencing harsha shoka bhaya. Harsha means jubilation. And Prabhupada says, especially in heavenly regions, as in heavenly regions like that, you soma rasa and sex life is going on for 6 months at a time. and then shoka, human life is a lot of shoka, is there? Animal life full of fear. Actually, all these experiences are in all the bodies, but in terms of predominance, Prabhupada is categorized like this. And this way, the body is giving so much trouble and it's going on. And you can't get out. You can't get out because the subtle body. I'm sorry, I always give these really mundane examples, but I think because we have contact with these things, it makes it clear. I just remember X-Men or something. I remember watching X-Men, cartoon X-Men, the animated series growing up. And I remember one type of episode when the antagonists are like the humans in the cartoon. And they would shoot this like sort of glue stuff that would just surround the body of the mutants. And then they would try to get out of it, but whenever they stretched, it would stretch with them. So they couldn't escape this like type of glue-type substance. That's what the subtle body is kind of like. You're trying to get out of it, but it's supple. So you can't get out, and you're completely bound up. You're trapped. And this way, because of being trapped by the subtle body, then body, you get one gross body after another. You can't get out. And you're experiencing shoka, aharsha, bhaya. And this way, suffering like anything. Any questions? Prabhupada, of course, quotes the verse, Daivyesha Gunamayi, to explain this verse, and that only you can get out by surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Same point. Very consistent point. The only way to get out is by surrendering to Krishna. Otherwise, no hope. Chant Hare Krishna. Any question, clarifications, points? Can you picture my little analogy? Some of you may remember X-Men, the anime series. Okay, then. Yeah. Yeah, they actually, because they travel with the subtle, they actually travel with the subtle body. I know we normally think them part of the gross body, but actually the senses are actually part of the subtle body. And when they combine with a gross body, then the gross body is able to do something. But because just like, for example, without a gross body, souls are able to perceive things, like the demigods, for example, where their bodies are also predominantly subtle. They have other elements also, but they're predominantly subtle. They still perceive the world. They still pursue it. How are they doing that? They don't have gross bodies. How do they do that? They do it with the subtle body. Similarly, in hellish planets we hear, they don't have gross bodies for which they're suffering. They have subtle bodies by which they're suffering. They're perceiving things in those subtle bodies. They're running. It shows them running and so on. So these are actually aspects of the subtle body and not the gross body. They combine with the gross body to do various sorts of things also. But they travel with the subtle body. Just like this another verse I was thinking, Bhagavatam, Budindriya Mano Pranam Jananam Ashrajat Prabhu Martratam Chabavartam Cha Atmane Akalpanaya Cha. This verse I mentioned last time, and Parashit Maharaj said that the Vedas are only speak of the modes of nature. Krishna is beyond the modes of nature, so how you've talked about him. And then he gives this verse that Krishna sent forth the buddhi, the indriya, the mind, and the prana by which the soul can martra. He can pursue sense gratification, he can pursue his next life, and he can pursue liberation also. So these things are all aspects of the subtle body, according to this Bhava's understanding. It means that you need, in other words, perception takes place through the subtle body. It doesn't take place through the gross body. That's the point. Perception is taking place through, we experience the material world through the subtle body. And so the experience, the senses which allow us to do
that. How does that relate to the spiritual body? I hear one time Prabhupada mentions that we have these senses, but they're really a covering for our true spiritual senses.
Sure. So like that.
So the subtle body is the covering imposed upon the spiritual body?
Yes, sometimes an analogy is given like a person who has fever. So when he has a fever, it's just a covering of his healthy senses, his healthy function of body. And when the fever is dissolved, then the healthy function of senses takes place also. So that's a way to help us to picture it. Another way to think about it is that the iron rod being stuck in fire. So by the fire of bhakti, bhakti becomes one with one's senses, which allows experience of Krishna and the transcendental reality. So there are different ways of it's been described like this.
Interesting discussion at UIC. We were talking, someone asked, because we were talking about the soul mm-hmm. and consciousness. Mm-hmm. So when you come in contact with someone, is it a connection of the soul or is it a connection of, you know, something else?
Well, it's both. And like what we quoted His Grace, Hiranyakashipu, the connections that take place in the material world are happening through gross and subtle bodies. And we identify with those. So I wouldn't exactly say that it's a soul-to-soul connection, per se. But the souls are experiencing that, you know. And they're falsely identifying their connection as something real genuine and wonderful and all that. But it's actually just the modes of nature with which they're really experiencing. They're not really experiencing each other because they don't know each other.
Human form of life, like in the life of a devotee, he's operating with the conditioned nature, an aspiring devotee.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking how amazing it is that acquired subtle nature, that conditioned nature, it acts as a medium by which he can actually perceive and act in transcendence. In other words, the covering seems very thin in the human form of life. The animal lives, the consciousness,
well,
the subtle body makeup.
The covering is quite thick in human form of life also, by which we are absorbed in trifle affairs. You know, the whole material world as we see it today in Kali Yuga is evidence of how thick the covering actually is. It's a very thick covering. Of course, in human life, there is potential, a potential that isn't found in the lower species of life, but a potential that can't be realized except in association with sadhus. And it's really sadhus that makes it seem like so easy, in fact. Otherwise, the covering is quite thick. You know, who's getting out of this material world? Out of so many humans, who's even endeavoring for spiritual realization? That shows you how thick the covering is. Amongst devotees, how many of us are so serious? How many of us are absorbed in trifle affairs ourselves? So the covering is thick, and anybody really.
I guess, I mean, once they take it up the process, then it seems it's a very transparent medium, the mind, the intelligence. They're using all these things, and yeah. They're very closely approaching the realm of transcendence.
As there's the ingress of the internal potency by surrender to guru and following the process, as you advance in the process, the advancement is like a gradual greater levels of ingress of the Swarup Shakti. You know, ingress means like a entryway, you know. So this, as we are moving forward by following guru, surrendering to guru, then there's a greater ingress of Swarup Shakti. And with that greater ingress of the internal potency, then the subtle body is acting in wonderful ways. It's helping us to realize Krishna. But before that, you know, there's so much trouble. And we see, practically, in our trying to establish community, devotee communities, how hard is it to establish community, devotee communities? Because the subtle body makes it challenging. Differing of opinions, schisms come up, and so on. This shows that even after taking shelter of Krishna, it's a challenge until people make advancement. It's a great challenge. Isn't it? The covering is thick. Yeah.
Become thin.
More thin. It becomes dissolved. Like the Bhagavatam says, dissolve the subtle body. Kapila Dev mentions this point about dissolving the subtle body. So the ingress of Swarup Shakti dissolves the fever, which is the subtle body. And then our real senses start to come to life in a healthy state. Till our mind and our senses, our intelligence, it all goes to Krishna. Yeah, you commit offenses, you know, you absorb yourself in trifle affairs, somehow or other something catches your attention, and then it can become reinforced by that. But if there's genuine ingress of Swarup Shakti, the nature of Swarup Shakti is that it only seeks Krishna, it doesn't seek anything else. So as we become more and more infused with bhakti, then our interest in Krishna and anything not Krishna conscious is dissolved. Therefore, that verse is there. Bhakti paresha anubhavo virakter anyatra chaisha trika eka kala. So this verse describes this point. Any other? Oh, Jitendra has been wanting to say something. Then let's see. I have a few more verses. I need to get to them. I don't think I'm going to make it. You might want to turn it on. I don't think it's on.
It says in the verse that animals are always afraid. In most cases, I see that. But today, in the parking lot, there was this big black cat sitting on this wall. And there's these two huge crows. And one crow's caw, and really intense. And these crows were the biggest I've ever seen, even bigger than those Calcutta ones, you know, with the blue beaks. And the cat's just sitting there like, what are you going to do? So, I mean, you know, you've heard of the king of the jungle. I mean, the lion's not afraid of a little squirrel or something, but...
Yes, so you've demonstrated for us that even animals have false egos that sometimes get exasperated.
But the cat was not even fazed by these huge birds, you know. It was really something to watch.
I could kill you if I wanted to.
If it was a hawk, maybe it was something different. You know? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, you want to say something?
The other day you were mentioning that everything is emanating from Krishna, and it is the intention or the desire to utilize in the service of Krishna, then everything makes a sense. So today's verse in the purport, the last verse we read, the subtle body is composed of very insurmountable strong desires. So if this strong desire is implemented to serve Krishna, will be easier to...
Yeah.
But what is the problem that we don't have that desire?
The subtle body. You can turn it off now.
Yeah, but the question is, we can counteract one desire with another desire. Is it possible?
Yes, but getting that other desire to counteract is the hard part, which is where the question is coming in. So Baladeva Vibhushana explains in his commentary to 334 Bhagavad Gita about how the subtle body works. He says this, the impressions in the subtle body makes one thing, that when he sees someone else's wife, the subtle body would say, good idea, and he won't see any consequences in doing so. Even if her husband's like a bodybuilder, his biceps bigger than your head, the subtle body said, what is the difficulty? What is the problem? He explains that's how the subtle body works. And then on the opposite side, a sadhu will be perceived, and he would not want to associate with a sadhu, and he would not see anything good in doing so also. So therefore, he describes this verse to explain the importance of shastras, because the shastras help us to get perspective that our subtle bodies won't allow us to get. So the shastras will speak about the consequences of associating with someone else's wife and the benefits of associating with sadhu, which our subtle body alone will not be able to appreciate. So by the words of shastra, which are really just the words of sadhus also, so the message of sadhu, somehow that if you are able to catch that by bhakti poshaka sukriti, the type of sukriti that nourishes bhakti that's been accumulated, then you'll be able to get on board the idea of cultivating a desire for Krishna, by which you can counteract these other sorts of desires, which is exactly what Krishna consciousness is. But it is a subtle body that makes it hard to gain that desire, which is like the poison to counteract the poison, so to speak. It's the poison for material existence, the desire to serve Krishna, sadhus, and so on. But to get that, you need a lot of sukriti, devotional type of sukriti. So that's the answer to the question. So subtle body is really creating a lot of complications for the living entity. And it goes on, an example of the complication it creates. Next verse. I only have 5 minutes left, and I can cover this verse. Maybe I'll do the next one also. Dehyagno jitas shatvargo nechchan karmani karyate koshakara ivatmanam karma na chadhya muhyati. The foolish embodied living entity, inept at controlling his senses and mind, ajita shatvargo, he cannot control his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature against his desires. This has already been explained. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and then becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own fruitive activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus, he is always bewildered. And repeatedly, he dies. Dies means he takes one body after another. Purport, as I already explained, the influence of the modes of nature is very strong. The living entity entangled in different types of fruitive activity is like a silkworm trapped in a cocoon. Getting free is very difficult unless he is helped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's message is the same point. Surrender to Krishna, helped by the Personality of Godhead. So then an example is being given, that how the subtle body keeps us trapped in the material world. An analogy is being given. Just like the silkworm, by his own silk, he creates a cocoon, and then he's trapped inside the cocoon. He can't get out. So similarly, the subtle body forces us to engage in activities which implicate us more and more in the material nature, right? That's the point that's being explained here. The subtle body forces us to actions that implicate us more and more in the material nature, makes you more and more bound up. It's something like quicksand. You know, I don't know this, but from the movies I've seen, and when you're falling in quicksand, the more you struggle, the more quickly you sink. So similarly, the subtle body is something like that. That's maybe a crude analogy. But as you're acting in this world, you're sinking faster and deeper into it. And that way, you find it very hard to get out of the material nature. It's just like a silkworm, an analogy is given. So by our own fruitive activities, which are impelled by our subtle bodies, we are deeply trapped in this material world. Very hard to get out. Prabhupada's simple message, unless you're helped by Krishna, then no hope. No hope. So the positive message is to take Krishna's shelter. Otherwise, no hope, helpless, and hopeless without Krishna's mercy. Any questions about that? Any points? Yeah. Neglect the mind. In that, it's compared to investing consciousness in something that is asat. So you're further enhancing that cocoon when you try to combat it. But the key, you know, like to transcend the modes is to be neutral. So is neglect the idea for the deranged
It depends on
mind?
How you think of that word neglect, to be honest with you. And the reason I say that, I'll share this verse. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th, 5th canto, chapter 11, verse number, is it this one? 17, yes.
You can see a good verse.
Vratrivyam enam tad adhapravirayam, upekshayar adhyeditam apramata guru hareshtarana upasana astra, jahivyalikam swayam atmamosham. This is a good verse. 5:11:17. So the uncontrolled mind, Bhartrivyam means the formidable enemy, the mind, is adabra viryam, is very, very powerful, as we have practical experience. Upekshaya, by neglecting it, upekshaya, if you neglect it, adyeditam, then it becomes increased in power. So like I said, it depends on how you think of the word neglect, because I understand how the word is often used. But the mind is not so easy that it would just allow you to ignore it. I think we have experience with that. I often give the image of a little kid poking at their father. They want something. The father's trying to have a reasonable conversation with another human being. The kid wants something. He's like, daddy, 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 daddy. You know, and finally to the father's like, what? You know, you're kind of like, so that's what happens to us. The mind is not so cooperative that you neglect it one, two times and says, okay, he's neglecting me. I'm not going to bother him anymore. So upeksha, if you neglect it, it means if you don't deal with it properly, then it will become increased in power. So if you're not crazy, apramata, if you're not mad, guru harish charana upasana ashtra, then with the weapon of worship of the lotus feet of Hari and Guru, you should conquer this mind, which is, although not substantial, it is covering the soul. So neglect the mind means to worship the lotus feet of Hari and Guru, follow their instructions, like that, etc. So otherwise the mind is not such that it will just allow you, it's not going to just like cooperate, sit down and die because you decided to neglect it one or two days. He's like, all right, okay. I'll get you in your dreams then, where you can't neglect me so easily. For example. So we need to worship Hari and Guru to be rescued. Any questions, other points? Does it make sense? Does it? It depends on how the word neglect is taken, though. Well, what is not specific about it? It means chant Hare Krishna, hear about Krishna in the Bhagavatam, follow the instructions of Guru. This is how we worship them. Yes. Yeah. This is how else. There are other ways you can do it. Ashtanga yoga. If you're sufficiently purified at heart, you can go to the forest if you like. And practice cultivating samadhi, which is a bit of a challenge in the age of Kali Yuga. And if you can't do that, then there's a process of bhakti, which means qualitative and quantitative increase of Krishna consciousness. Take in more Krishna, more chanting, more hearing about Krishna. You know, all of us, we know it well. We could be doing more Harinam Sankirtan, more japa, more hearing Krishna's pastimes, more absorption in the shastras, more absorption in sevas that are meant for pleasing Krishna. Prabhupada says in this way, in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, verse 22 through 25, I think that's the series of verses there. Prabhupada says in this way, you're so engaged in Krishna that you forget the material body. Prabhupada makes a statement like that. So maybe that connects to your negligence point. You're so engaged in Krishna, you forget about it. Otherwise, it doesn't forget you. I was hearing a story from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. I'm not hearing, I read something. He was explaining very beautifully about how there were two brahmacharis. They were walking on the bank of a river,
and they see a black like blanket floating down the river. So one of the brahmacharis jumps in to get the blanket, and he realizes it's actually a bear. So the bear embraces him, you know, thinking that the sadhu has come for his rescue as such, because he's, I guess, going down the river. So then the other brahmachari on the bank is like, hey, come out now, trying to get out. He said, I'm trying, but this bear has grabbed me. You know, I'm stuck here. So short story. And Shridhar Maharaj, he was describing how this is exactly what happens when we want to get out of Maya. That we want to get out of Maya, but Maya has embraced us. You know, and we heard for so amount of time also. And he quotes this verse of the Gita. I love how Maharaj uses the Gita so beautifully. He quotes the verse of the Gita describing the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, describing how lust is taken post in the subtle body, in the intelligence, the mind, and the senses, the lust can be found. So it's describing that verse. He describes how Maya has embraced us. And we her for some time, but even if we let go, she has embraced us. And she's all in us, you know, completely. And therefore, giving up Maya is no small task. Only by taking shelter of Krishna is the message. How do we do that? We increase the amount of time we spend with Krishna. And, you know, chanting his holy names, hearing about him, remembering him in this way. Otherwise, there's Ashtanga Yoga, which also in the path of cultivating samadhi. And, you know, it's definitely a bona fide path, although I suspect it would be quite challenging in the age of Kali. Because you got to practice alone. You can't even share your asana. And, you know, this is described in the Bhagavad Gita. You can't even share asanas because of potential controversy that can break out if another yogi wants to use his asana. So therefore, you got to practice alone. Because because that process needs a high level of mental concentration. And so you need to practice alone. So I suspect that would be difficult for the vast majority of us. So then we have our process of bhakti, which is basically just increase the time spent with Krishna. That's basically the idea. Any other points, questions, comments, concerns? Yeah. Yeah, our own desire really is the desire of Maya, so to speak, for us. Means, just like Krishna says, you think you're doing something, but everything is actually being done by the modes of nature. And one way to think about this, I think, is that the desire that gets everything acting is also the modes of nature. So everything literally is being done by the modes of nature. Even the desires we have and that we pursue, that is the modes of nature. And then the modes of nature facilitate the coming about of those desires according to our karma. So everything is being done by the modes of nature. The only real desire comes up in the soul when he gets association with sadhus, by which he desires transcendence. And of course, in the case of devotees, it means getting the bhakti bhakti bija. And then from there, the desire, that the seed of desire, that's what the bhakti bhakti bija is. It's shraddha, it's the seed of desire. That seed of desire goes through the material world. It penetrates the Brahma Jyoti even, so that one does not desire mukti, that abominable and personal liberation, for the Shuddha bhaktas at least. And then it goes all the way up to the lotus feet of Krishna, and begin to. So that's the seed of desire, actually. It has a gain. The seed of desire, when watered by the process of Shravanam and Kirtanam, gains strength to penetrate the material existence, and then penetrate the Brahma Jyoti, even, the desire for liberation, ultimately taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, even our desires are my only. Even our good ideas, where you get the good idea from? Who gave it to you? So I came up with a good idea. Oh, really? Where did it come from? Out of my own mind. You came up with the desire, huh? Yeah, it was my desire. Really, your desire. And that way we're remaining in the material world, totally bewildered, some moha. I really like the verse these days, completely bewildered. No one knows me. Everyone's totally bewildered. Any other points, questions, concerns? Okay, I was actually supposed to, I was hoping to go up to verse 55. Didn't make it today. So, Karma Karuna, you can try, but don't rush it to finish tomorrow. So I guess we'll finish for today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.